Good evening and welcome back to the Journey Home program. I'm your host, John-Marc Grodi, here in EWTN. And once again, we have this great opportunity to come together to hear a convert share what led them home to the Catholic Church. It's great to be with you again. We're joined tonight by Becca Dickerson. She's a former United Methodist. Becca, it's great to have you here tonight to share your story.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
I appreciate you coming to share. And so, as always, United Methodist, that's just a tip of the iceberg there. There's a lot to tell. But let's go back to the beginning. Tell us about your childhood, your family's background, your religious background.
So, raised in the church.
Yeah.
And
I am in the Methodist church.
Yeah, gotcha. Let me clarify. Okay. Yeah, the Methodist church.
Great.
But my parents always, they had a conversion experience of their own where they came to faith. And so we were very much a Jesus family, really. And so I never knew anything other than that. Mm. So I remember, honestly, probably accepting Jesus at 7 years old because we just lived our life in the church.
Yeah.
Everything revolved around church. We had, I played sports and whatever, but everything was like church night and, we're going to do praise band or anything in the church. So I had a really good, solid upbringing. Bible. I mean, my dad, I would come downstairs in the morning, he's reading his Bible. So a really good example.
Beautiful.
From both my parents. We were just really heavily involved. I got confirmed in the Methodist church. I mean, I received whatever sacraments they had there. So I had a really solid upbringing. So then when I was probably 16 years old, something just changed in me. And I think for the better. I don't know what happened. It was just like a download of the Holy Spirit. And all of a sudden, my parents were telling me that they thought I was a Nazirite. The Old Testament Nazirites who were just on fire. Because all of a sudden, it just clicked for me that I just really loved the Lord. So I was reading my Bible. I was just involved in everything at church. I was like the typical church girl. So that was 16. And so then by the time I was graduating high school, I was pretty determined that I was going to go to Christian college because I really didn't want to jeopardize all of that time that I'd spent, 2 years there, really like getting deep and really understanding the Lord.
Yeah. And for those who aren't Methodist or weren't Methodist, what does that look like? In terms of belief, in terms of what does worship look like in that context?
Yeah. I was involved in all the music stuff at church. I was very musical. Did all the praise and worship. We did Bible studies.
Okay.
Also, I'll say my uncle is a Pentecostal preacher. Mm. So I grew up seeing their life as well. And my aunt and uncle have been in ministry for 40 plus years. Mm-hmm. And so I watched them do so much ministry and just observed their life as people who love Jesus so much. So that really influenced me as well. But our liturgy at the Methodist church, we had a decent, rule of the way things ran in a service, but it was very contemporary, lots of preaching, heavy preaching, of course. Mm-hmm. But I grew from that. Yeah. I had good mentors, good people there, but I was really in the Bible. I mean, really, that was the crux for me, those 2 years of being really solidly in the Bible.
Very
so
good.
Then I was like, where am I going to go to college? So there's a host of Christian universities to go to. Mm-hmm. And I visited a few and I looked around and then ended up deciding to go to Asbury College in Kentucky, which was very far away for us because this was all in Maryland. So I grew up right in northern Maryland, just south of Gettysburg.
Yeah.
But I didn't really mind that it was going to be a far trip because I really wanted to go somewhere where I'd grow.
Yeah.
And I visited so many other colleges, but I just felt right at home at Asbury. I don't know what it was. That was the last one too. It was nearing the end of my senior year. Didn't know where I was going to go. So that one I stepped on campus and I just felt this is it.
Yeah.
So I left in August and I started there. And then it was like hardcore growth, I would say. Asbury for everything that it offers, I feel like I grew miles from where I was. I feel like because I had been doing so much discipleship kind of on my own with a few mentors, I just had hardcore repentance and I broke myself and the Lord broke me of being a Pharisee. I really felt like I was very judgmental because I had all this time in the Bible, but not enough with people. And so Asbury, that first semester was so hard, but it was so good. It was a growing semester for me. And I received really good teaching. Obviously, when you go to Christian college, you have to take Bible class anyway. So I was in the Bible in a better way than I had been because it was just founded on more than me just reading it, trying to discern what it meant. You know, I was getting taught.
What's the theology of Asbury?
In the past have been Wesleyan.
Okay.
So very Methodist.
Yeah.
But they're now non-denominational.
Okay.
So I got a good mixture of people because some of the people that taught us were Salvation Army, who I didn't realize, you know, have very different beliefs than what I had grown up with as well. But I, that first semester, even the first year, just immense growth.
Yeah.
So at that time, I would say also, I was very exposed to things that I didn't ever know. And I said, why have I never known this? Because we had to take Old Testament, New Testament, that was fine. We got to Christian theology and we're learning things about, you know, St. Augustine, his name came up, and St. Irenaeus and some of the early church people. And I said, why haven't I ever known about any of these people before? So there was a gap for me from, you know, like Acts, the book of Acts until Luther. There was just like a unknown for me. So I'm sitting in Christian Theo class. I was a young Christian Theo student also, because usually the kids in that class were older. They had waited a long time, but I really wanted to know and do more Bible stuff. So I took it early and I'm so glad I did. So I'm sitting in that class listening to this. And by that time, I had gotten involved in a church, a very like non-denominational church. It was like a black box. So, and lights, sound, everything. It was a church plant.
Yeah.
So right outside, so Asbury's in Kentucky, right near Lexington. It was right like near Lexington. And so I loved it because it was authentic. The people were wonderful. And so I got really involved in there. I got involved in the worship music since that's what I had done all growing up. And I started questioning a little bit after I read some things about St. Augustine and all these fathers. I was like, I don't know if we're doing what we're supposed to be doing in the way we're worshiping God. This was a church also who, again, I will say they were so authentic, but the way we receive communion, that was like the kicker for me because we had read about, you know, the way the early church did communion and what they went through to even be gathering together for worship. And we would, you know, the pastor would say, go and receive communion in the back. And it was like a little, one of those little cups of wine and a bread, a piece of bread.
Right.
And so something didn't sit right with me, but I didn't like, you know, see Catholicism in the realm of anything at this point. I honestly, growing up too, I had Catholic friends, but I was not at all aware of Catholicism. I remember going to Stations of the Cross one time with a friend and she was like, just watch what we do and you can sit with us and then that'll be it. Like, it wasn't like a, come do this thing with us. It's really cool.
Did you see him as fellow Christians?
Yeah, we did. Okay. But I was always like, this is kind of weird. Plus, I lived close to Emmitsburg, where Mount St. Mary's is. And there's, if anybody's ever been to the grotto, they know there's a giant statue of Mary, a gold statue on the mountain that you can see from the highway. So my parents were kind of wary about it. Like, there's just a big statue, a golden statue of Mary over there. And so we were wary about it. And so I didn't have any perception of, you know, anything Catholic at all. But I knew from that class and then going to this church, which I really loved, and they had given me some leadership and stuff. It was really fabulous. But I knew that I couldn't stay there. So I didn't know where I was going to go, but I just knew I couldn't do this whole take communion in the back kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And there was just more. Something more there.
Yeah. I mean, right. Obviously, get into any of those questions, whether about the praxis or the theology, it starts to bring up this question of like, does this framework fit? You know, what was your perception of the sacraments growing up? I mean, did they do something? Were they just a rite of passage?
Just a symbol. Okay. As far as I know, growing up at the Methodist church, we took communion once a month and that was it. I mean, it didn't really mean other, besides Jesus telling us to do it because we were supposed to remember him. That was pretty much it. It didn't mean much more than that. Yeah. I was baptized in a swimming pool at age 12. My parents wanted to do the, you know, Jesus was dedicated thing. So they dedicated me when I was a baby and then they let me decide when I wanted to be baptized, which I appreciate also. I didn't mind being baptized in a swimming pool. It's a fond memory now.
Yeah.
And it's a cool story.
Yeah.
So I was baptized and then I got confirmation in the Methodist church and we received communion, but it wasn't like, there wasn't anything deep there. So, and I was very surface level. I don't know what this means, but we do it because Jesus tells us to do it. So having this whole, like, what is this world that I have never been exposed to from, you know, the Acts of the Apostles to Martin Luther, there's more here that's been happening. I just knew I had to leave. I didn't know where that was going to lead me, but I had to leave. So I went to the pastor and I went to the worship leader, as they call it, the praise and worship guy. And I was like, I have to leave the church. Because again, they had given me some leadership. I was like, I have to say no to being a leader here and I have to leave the church. And they were like, okay. And I said, I don't know what that means, but the Holy Spirit's really telling me I have to leave. So I left and then began a journey of, you know, bopping around to every denomination that I could kind of get my hands on. Mm-hmm. All the while I'm reading stuff as well. So I started reading about doctrine. And at that time, so I'd finished that Christian theology class, and then I moved on and I took a history of the early church class. And that's like, you know, the nail in the coffin for all of us. Because at that point, it was just like a flood of all the things that I didn't know. So that class, interestingly enough, also taught by someone in the Salvation Army. And I realized they didn't have any sacraments in the Salvationist Church. And so I looked at my professor and was like, how are you teaching this class? And you don't believe in the sacraments, because this all is like about the sacraments and the early fathers and the martyrs and everything. But he was fantastic. So I learned a lot in that class. And that's when I just started going around. I was like, do I need to be Baptist? What do I need to do here? Do I need to be Lutheran? Where do I fit? So I think I did go to a Pentecostal church as well. I've got charismatic family. So I was like, I'll try there too, which I really liked. But there wasn't enough. There was always something, you know, lacking. It wasn't as deep as I wanted it to be. I like the way the service runs. I like the music, but it wasn't enough. There was something missing. So I went there. I think I went to a Lutheran church for a while. I went to a bunch of churches my friends had. I went to all the United Methodists because I was like, maybe I'll go back and see how, you know, a more traditional Methodist service is like. And then I think eventually, after a long time, I ended up in the Messianic Jewish congregation. So I don't know how that all came there, but it was a big, all of a sudden I was like, I think this is it, which was a very interesting congregation. All the while too, I have Catholic friends at home, you know, I'm friends with in the Emmitsburg area. They're all Catholic. So I'm telling them the whole time, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm just like thinking about things. And I've been reading the early church and they were like, all right. So they were so kind and patient with me. My parents also knew that this was happening. They were very kind too, because Catholicism had not come up really. I was just kind of on a journey. So all this happens while I'm at Asbury. I took that class on the church, still like learning and reading. And then I end up in the Messianic Jewish congregation, which was in the basement of a hotel, which was very interesting, but they had a liturgy. And they had a really lovely, authentic group of people. And they also, after their liturgy, would have like a meal. And so the community was there. It was beautiful. And I have Jewish ancestry. So I was always like, this really connects with me, you know. Maybe this is where I belong, because I, you know, I have Jewish ancestors. I like the liturgy. There's a community here. But eventually I went for a couple weeks. And then I realized that it wasn't enough still. It was a lot of Judaism, because, I mean, the rabbi there was holding the, you know, the scrolls and stuff and doing some of the old things that were really attractive to me. And then on the other side, there wasn't enough Jesus. I wanted more Jesus. It was a lot of Judaism, which I appreciated, and just some Jesus, but I wanted more. So I stayed there for a little while. And then I think I came home for a break from college, and my friends invited me to go to the Seton Shrine in Emmitsburg. And I walked in and I was like, all right. I've been to the grotto, which is behind Mount St. Mary's, where that big Mary statue is. but I'd never been to the Seton Shrine. I didn't know anything about Mother Seton. I didn't even know it was there. I mean, I grew up 15 minutes probably from Emmitsburg. No idea that was there. My friends were like, let's go over to the Seton Shrine. So I walk in and I'm like, what is it about this place that is so different? Obviously, it's the Eucharist because he was there, you know. But at the time, I was like, what is it? I mean, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful basilica. Something just was awakened at that point because I was like, maybe this is it because there's beauty here. There's just something different here than I haven't found before. So still in college, go back to school. Now I'm like, all right, I got to investigate Catholicism. Mm-hmm. So then I start reading all the books that we all read, you know. The history of the early church class was great because we were reading like Eusebius,
right,
and like the meaty, you know, early church
primary
stuff.
Sources. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I get to stuff like, I'm going to read Dr. Hahn now, and I'm going to read about converts and people who've come from where I am. I'm going to watch this program, The Journey Home, and see if anybody resonates with where I am, you know. So I'm doing a lot of studying, researching, all while I'm at Asbury, which I'm telling my family this too. I'm telling my family and my friends. My family is okay with it. They're skeptical, but they trust me, I guess, to be looking for the truth. And my friends at Asbury, a lot of them are okay with it. Some of them very questioning, very skeptical mm-hmm. as well. And at that point, I was like, maybe I should start, you know, going to something to learn about Catholicism. So I found out there was a program called RCIA, and I call a parish in Lexington. And the formator there is like, you're not the first person from Asbury to come over here. So I was like, all right. So I go to Lexington, beautiful parish, Mary Queen of the Holy Rosary. I don't know why I chose that. Mary was a far off doctrine yeah. for me to get to. I mean, she was yeah. a hard one. I don't know why I chose it.
Yeah.
But it just felt right. So I called her. She gave me a tour of the church. I joined RCIA. And then I was going there every Sunday. So sometimes I would come into the cafeteria at Asbury with my church bulletin from Mary Queen of the Holy Rosary. And my friends would be like, what are you doing? Why are you going to Mass? But so I just started reading as much as I could get my hands on and praying and learning and listening to the music. I was always won by the music. So then this whole world of chant, the choir stuff, my whole world was like praise and worship at that point. It was just beautiful.
Yeah.
But I had never really been exposed to some of these things. So I'm listening, reading all these different people, watching. And then I take a long time. I mean, it really took me a long time. Mm. But I start to get comfortable with the doctrines. So it's just one by one over sure. and over. I think the thing that really won me, honestly, is the social teaching of the church. That was my gateway.
Okay.
I studied sociology in school anyway, so I was with a whole load of people talking about these kind of issues all the time anyway in class. And all of a sudden, I'm like, well, we're going to talk about marriage and family. I want to see what the Catholic Church teaches since I'm kind of interested in it. So I find these teachings about contraception. I've always been pro-life, but I learned more about what the church was doing to help people who were struggling in pregnancies and considering abortions. But all those teachings, they kind of won me over because it made sense to me.
Right.
So then I started like thinking about theology of the body. So all these things just kind of built on each other. And I started looking at the other teachings of the social teaching. Again, it was like a gateway for me. And also the fathers, of course, the church fathers. So I'm reading all these things and listening, and then I'm really, now the formators at the church are like, well, what about Easter? You know, I've been in for a while there. I'm like, I don't know. I'm not ready. So in my heart, I felt like I was going to be honestly married to a pastor and doing some work because we had a seminary right across the street from Asbury. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, I'll be a pastor's wife. I'll just be in, you know, helps ministry or like serve him and serve the church that wherever. I really thought maybe that was it. You know, like I was supposed to be an assistant, you know, someone serving in the church, helping someone else. So I was very confused. And I was like, I don't know, just let me pass over this year. And so they let me stay in again. I went home for the summer and did go to Mass sometimes or go to stuff with my friends. Mm-hmm. And then I come back for another year of RCIA. And I think at that point, I think I was a senior at Asbury. So at that point, I'm still doing all the discerning. I've picked up the rosary probably at that point too and started praying. wondering where I'm going to be.
Yeah.
My family's a little questioning more now because I'm deeper in. So
well, let's pause there for a moment. I'm not going to go to a break yet, but again, as you go through RCA, you're working through all this stuff, let's talk about some of the things you discovered that were eye-opening to you. I mean, you mentioned social doctrine being a real gateway. And, that, and again, as a side note here, again, if you anyone listening or watching, if you haven't picked up the church's catechism and her, you know, works of social doctrine, the compendium of social doctrine is a great one. You know, like, again, it is an amazing thing. It's a work of the Holy Spirit that we have this great body, clear, easy to read, scriptural, historical, this catechism, and then a very clear and reasonable and compelling, challenging social doctrine that follows from the theology.
Yep.
And that itself is sort of a miracle. It's sort of an amazing thing. It's not something you really find elsewhere, both the consistency and the rootedness in the theology that then spills over into. So that, again, great thing. Check those both out for sure. But in addition to that, like, what are some of the other topics and aspects that you, that were either eye-opening, you know, negative or a positive way, and how did you work through them?
Yeah. Sure. I think the authority of the church was always really attractive to me. Mm-hmm. That if I read the scripture and I was reading something and I was like, I don't know what this means, I could always go somewhere and, you know, type in, what does the church, Catholic Church teach about, you know, John, whatever.
Yeah.
I just didn't find that. Mm-hmm. And I remember asking some of my professors too, at some point, I think I asked him about, I had some weird teaching from one of the professors there about forgiveness and how we receive forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked one of my other professors, and he didn't really have that great of an answer either. And so then I was looking at the sacraments again and looking at, oh, well, the church has confession, you know, and that makes a lot of sense because what happens after you're baptized, you know, some of those things, the authority, some of the sacramental things. And then, of course, I get to the Eucharist because I listened to the Fourth Cup talk by Dr. Hahn, and that opened a whole good can of worms for me because
the Eucharist has got to be either a big deal or just ridiculous.
Exactly.
Right? It's got to be one or the other.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think I read that quote from St. Cyril, who said, if the Lord himself said, this is the body and blood, then who are we to say it's not?
Right.
And so that struck me, and I was like, well, okay, then I better look at this. Let me look into this.
Mm-hmm.
So the Fourth Cup teaching from Dr. Hahn, really, that urged me on because I could see the connection as someone who loved the Bible so much.
Right.
The connection with the Passover to the Eucharist, it was so easy for me to be like, I can get behind this.
Yeah.
This is amazing. Yeah. And so then my same professor that I went to ask these questions, who was a good Bible professor, I was like, we're talking about, you know, the Gospel of John. Can you explain John 6? Can you just go into it? And I think he knew where I was going, but he really had no answers for me. None. I'm sitting in a class with, you know, 20 other kids, and I'm like, what does John 6 mean if it isn't what the Catholic Church says it is? Right. Is that Jesus is literally saying, this is my body and my blood.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to receive it, like, to have life in me. And so I'm like, this is a pretty big deal. He's like, well, I don't know about that. I mean, he really had no answers.
Yeah.
So then I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to have to go even deeper then and go into the church. So then all the other things started coming up. The Marian doctrines, which were hard because as a Protestant, we just don't, Mary's just Mary. She's not much more than that. But I always was like, I'm going to look at it and see what the church has taught. And, you know, how long have they believed that? That gave a lot of credit for me. I was like, well, they've taught it for a long time. It wasn't just, you know, recently declared doctrines, like the people, the early church, I always was like, the fathers believed this stuff. I can get behind it. Like they were with Jesus or they were with the apostles.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through all that stuff. The Pope, I really had no problem with. Honestly, I could easily accept that kind of stuff. It was the, like, making sure I 100% I'm going to be cool with this.
Mm-hmm.
Do I believe every doctrine? Do I really believe Jesus is present in the Eucharist? Am I ready to go to confession?
Mm-hmm.
Am I ready to, you know, have confirmation and believe in what the church teaches and all the sacraments? Am I really okay with an all-male priesthood? You know, am I really okay with this stuff? And that's why I think I was in RCA for a very long time. Because I just couldn't decide. And I had voices on one side saying, you probably shouldn't be Catholic. It's not right. And then I'd have voices on the other side, you really should be Catholic. It's really great. And I said, am I going to lose friends? Am I going to lose, like, what am I going to lose? Am I going to lose also my vocation? Like, if I had really felt like I might be a pastor's wife, am I going to lose that vocation by becoming Catholic? Obviously. Is that really what God's calling me to be? So on one hand, if I did not become Catholic, would people be mad at me? If I became Catholic, would people be mad at me?
Yeah.
So I have to get down in my knower right. at this point, you know, and what am I supposed to do? Where is God leading me?
Right. Well, that's a perfect place for a pause then. We'll go to a quick break and then come back and see what got you off the fence. So again, we're joined tonight by Becca Dickerson. She's a former United Methodist, and we'll be back again in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of her story. I want to remind you in the meantime that if you go to chnetwork.org/story, we have a whole archive of conversion stories, both Journey Home programs as well as written stories, short videos from all different backgrounds, all different circumstances. And so if you check that out, you'll likely find somebody from a similar background to you. And you can read those stories and check them out. And again, pray with them. Pray where the Lord's leading you. And certainly send us a note if we can be of assistance praying with you and for you on your own journey of faith. But in the meantime, we'll be back in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of Becca's story. See you then. Welcome back to the Journey Home program. We're entering the second half of our hour tonight, speaking with Becca Dickerson. She's a former United Methodist. And Becca, before we left off, before I rudely interrupted your story here, you're on the fence, right? You got people on both sides of you as you're exploring Catholicism, you know, and you're not sure what the social implications would be of making a move. What happens? What happened next?
So this is like the end of my Asbury journey.
Sure.
Right. And I'm about to graduate. And I do want to say, too, that there's a reason why I think I found Catholicism at Asbury, because that place is about seeking truth.
Yeah.
No matter what, it's about finding the truth.
That's great.
And so I found the truth, and I'm glad to have done it there, honestly. Mm-hmm. I did have some weird interactions, like with friends who were very skeptical of what I was doing and very confused, but they just didn't know. And I, you know what, I bless them, and I have no... I'm not upset about it. We had great conversations. I was in theology classes with people that were going to be ministers.
Right.
And they just knew me, and it was a long journey. It wasn't like I'm going to go to RCA and then became Catholic within months. I mean, it was a long time for me. So they respected, I think, that I took the time, that I was really discerning and seeking things. But I do remember one time we were outside the cafeteria, and I think, I don't know, it was just like a couple girls. We were just standing there, and I was sharing for some reason about the brown scapular. I think I had just gotten one because I learned about it. I went really hardcore and started wearing a brown scapular, you know. And so I was telling about this brown scapular and what it does, and they were like, okay. They were just very weirded out. That one sticks out of my mind as one of the most weird interactions. Right. But on the whole, people wanted to know.
Yeah.
Why are you doing that? Yeah. Why are you going to Mass? Like, and I had to tell them, like, there's more to it. Look at the social teaching. Look at what the church has done. Like, look at all the other denominations that are kind of falling apart. Mm-hmm. The Catholic Church is still united.
Yeah.
They have an authority. So I'm at the end of Asbury journey. My RCI people at the parish are like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I don't know. So they jokingly told me that I'm on the 5-year plan. So I said, that's fine because I don't know what I'm doing. So I graduated, and I was planning on going to go to grad school for social work and just stay there at Asbury in Kentucky. And then over the summer, my parents were questioning what I wanted to do because it's a lot more money. Do I really want to stay? I was like, I don't know. I'm not really sure. So I got, you know, I was in prayer driving. I was waitressing at the time, so I had a drive to my waitressing job. I'm asking the Lord, what do you want me to do here? Do you want me to go to grad school? What do you want me to do? So I'm driving, and, you know, I've had, I think from probably middle school, I had a really interesting, like, interest in Ireland for some reason. So all this time I'm looking into Catholicism, too. I'm realizing what happened during the Troubles in Northern Ireland, which I really had no understanding of. But because I've been looking at Catholicism and Protestantism, I'm saying to myself, you know, Ireland's a really interesting place. So I started looking up. Where can I go in Ireland? You know, maybe take a year to figure out what I want to do. And then if I really want to come back to grad school, then I'll do it. So I do that, find this really huge mega church. This is a Protestant church in Belfast, right in East Belfast. And they happen to have an internship program for young adults. So I'm like, all right. Well, it's a little late because at that point it was like June. And that starts in August. So it's kind of a crunch, but I'm going to just pray on this and I'm going to do what I can. So I look at it. I tell my family, thinking that maybe this is a good place for me to be, because there's this whole, like, you know, Catholic thing and Protestant thing, and none of them can get along. Maybe I can do something about that. Maybe I can be some sort of bridge, since I've been in both camps, right? So by God's providence, he works it all out for me. I raised $20,000 in 2 months to buy a ticket, get a visa, do all the things I need to do. And I go to Northern Ireland on a plane by myself in August. And someone, I go to the bus stop in like East Belfast, and I just sit there for someone who's supposed to come pick me up. So it's a total like faith thing for me. But I'm really excited. There's just so many elements. I get to serve the church. It's Protestant, but I'm like, it's fine. You know, there's all the things are there, the Catholic and the Protestant. So and so I go to Northern Ireland. They pick me up at the bus stop. No worries about that. I was picked up. And I go and live with a lovely family in East Belfast who's Protestant. Goes to the church. It's a huge church. This is the church that birthed Robin Mark, who wrote songs like Days of Elijah and stuff. Big time worship music community. That was a draw for me too, because that was my heart. I love the music, you know, Jesus music. So I go and they put me like in different parts of ministry there in this huge, I mean, for Belfast, it's a mega church. For us Americans, it's not as, it's not what probably would be considered a mega church, but for that small of a place, it definitely was. So they have a huge history of revival, of people, very charismatic community, people being really on fire. So I get put in youth ministry, which is not really where I want to be, but it's where I get put, and I love it. I end up loving it so much. I do talk to Robin and talk to him about worship music stuff. And so I just served the whole year. And it was very fortuitous that I was there. I was involved in the Alpha course while I was there, which I'd never been involved in. And we had Catholics coming to our Alpha course. And so at that point, I'm sitting in my small group at Alpha, and I'm like, this is why I'm here. Because there's people that are like, well, in my church, I go to the Catholic church, and we think blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, another person from my church, the big church, is like, well, that's not really. And so I felt like in that moment, I was the bridge. In that program, especially for the young people, I was there because a lot of the young people came from different parts of the city. So East Belfast is mostly Protestant, and that's where I lived and I worked. I think I went to Mass one time my whole time there, because if you're Protestant, you just don't go to Mass there. So they walked in and all the folks were like, what are you? Who are you? Like, what is this American doing here? But all the while, I'm still like, I don't know about this. So that whole year I'm there, I also go to Africa and see a beautiful ministry in Africa while I'm there too. I went to Zimbabwe for 2 weeks. So it's a huge experience for me, growing, hardest year of my life, but the most beautiful because I learned so much. And then on the outset, I see the flaws of Protestantism once again. And when I come back to the States, I'm like, I'm going to have to look into this again, like, and get more serious about Catholicism now that I'm back. Because being in a mega church where there's no authority, there's just too much to give. You know, like, there wasn't enough saying, this is what we believe and this is what we teach. Because my friends in the church in Belfast were like, well, we think this and we think. There was no unified anything. So I think being in that megachurch really pushed me further than I would have been if I didn't go. And I decided not to go to grad school. So I came back and I went back to my hometown. And then I decided that I would live with someone in Emmitsburg, which Emmitsburg is like a Catholic holy place. You have Mother Seton there.
Yeah.
You have the grotto. There's just so much. And Mount St. Mary's. So then I'm back from Northern Ireland. Once again, like, what am I going to do with this information that I know? I really don't think I can be non-denominational Protestant. I got to figure this out. So I'm going to Mass, I'm going to these holy places. And then my roommate and I decide that we're going to host a Bible study in our house. I'm like, great, cool. We invite a seminarian over. This is the kicker for me. This is, that was another, like, you know, nail in the coffin. Yeah. So we invite the seminarian over, and he's talking to me about my journey and all this other stuff.
A Catholic seminarian.
Catholic seminarian at the Mount.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And so I'm just telling him, I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know. I love the church, but I have questions about, you know, certain things. And like, what if I become Catholic and all these people hate me? And what if I, you know, what if I don't? And he's like, you don't have any more excuses. I think he literally said that phrase. What is keeping you out? You have no more excuses. And I looked at him, I was like, you are correct. I have no more excuses. So I think within like a week, we called the priest. He came over to my house. And I said, I think it's time. I don't want to go through any more RCIA. That had been like 5 years of journeying at that point. And he was like, you don't need any more RCIA. I think you're good. And he was so kind. And he said, well, then what do you want to do? You're baptized. So when do you want to come in the church? And I was like, well, let's look. So I looked in the Sunday schedule. You know, October 4th happened to be a Sunday. I had really liked St. Francis of Assisi, and that happened to be his feast day. So he was like, all right, let me call the bishop. He got it all sorted, and that was it. So I think I came back from Northern Ireland, and then I had these conversations with people, and within a year, I was there. October, I was into the church.
Wow.
And I'll say, when I told my parents, I went and told them, I think I spent the weekend before I told my parents, my awesome aunt had come down, my aunt and uncle who are, you know, Pentecostal. And I had gone to a very big non-denominational retreat, I think, with her, like a women's retreat. And all the while I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I got to tell him. I got to tell him I'm going to be Catholic. Yeah. So I come back to our house and I just tell my parents. And I think my parents' general reaction was, thank God. They were at that point so glad that I had chosen, because they had been with me, you know, watching me do all these things and journeying and wondering if I was going to be Catholic and wondering if I was going to be Protestant. My friends, I think I told them, I think I'm going to be Catholic. And then, you know, weeks later, I'm like, I don't know about this anymore. The same thing with the people in the church in Kentucky. They were so kind. I would tell them, like, I don't know if I can come back to class because I'm not sure about this. And then I'd show up to class. You know, I was just all over the map, but they were so patient. So my parents were like, I'm so glad you've chosen something. You're not on the fence anymore. We're so glad you've chosen. And my mom's literal phrase to me was, it's fine as long as you don't become a nun. I was like, okay, Mom. But at that point, all was on the table.
Right, right.
No. Who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, yeah.
So that was, I think, 2015.
Okay.
I became Catholic on October 4th, St. Francis Feast Day. And a lot of people were there. Right. I mean, Protestant friends, too. Because when I came back to the States from Northern Ireland, I joined our youth ministry at the Methodist Church where I grew up. I was like, I got to do youth ministry because I love it now.
Yeah.
And I had to tell the pastor there, had to tell the youth pastor, but it wasn't like they were shocked. They were very kind about it.
Yeah.
So then I left, joined the parish, and immediately got involved there too, doing stuff. So that happens. And honestly, I didn't tell my mom this, but I am discerning at that point because I'm a neophyte, really. I wasn't newly baptized, but I was new. And I was like, this also is kind of a cool thing now too. Like if I become Catholic, like I could give my whole life to Jesus and be a sister. So then I'm looking around, you know, really discerning. And even I would say before I became Catholic, I was like, are there Protestant nuns? Are there? Doing a quick Google search to try and find out. There are, in fact, Protestant nuns.
Really?
But like Episcopalian or something. Oh, but right. I was like, this isn't the real deal, is it? I got to be Catholic if I'm going to be a sister. So I start getting packets from some orders. And I'm thinking, I don't know. I worked at the Seton Shrine, actually. I went back there and I worked there for a little bit. I started teaching as well. So my students are asking me too. Like, at this point, my name was Richard. So they're like, Miss Richards, are you going to get married? And I was like, well, ladies, I don't know. I might actually become a sister. And they were like, really? These were like eighth grade girls asking me these questions. So, but I'm visiting things. I'm going on retreat. Really trying to figure it out. So that I became Catholic in 2015. And then I go on retreat in January. Again, I'm working, I'm teaching at this point. I was teaching at elementary and middle school, just like music, really nothing like theological or anything. But I'm really trying to figure it out. And my friends are really helpful. I mean, they're encouraging me to do whatever I need to do to discern. Older grown people, they're like, yeah, absolutely. You need to discern this stuff. So I go on retreat in January, and I didn't realize this till recently, and I read my journal from going on retreat. The Lord told me no. So I'm sitting in retreat with these awesome sisters outside of Baltimore, and I get spiritual direction from them too. But then I'm sitting outside in the cold on one of their swings, you know, and I'm like, Lord, what do you want me to do? Where am I supposed to go? I mean, I've got a university degree. I'm just teaching at this place. I'm kind of working some odd jobs. What do you want me to do? And I hear a really hard no. You don't need to be a sister. I don't want you to be a sister. And so I was like, all right, well, now what? So I go home. And then honestly, 9 months later, I met my husband. So it was like fortuitous that he told me no.
Yeah.
Met my husband. And I am so proud of the fact that I became Catholic before I met him, because he was Catholic. And I honestly, before I became Catholic, I was like, maybe I should, like, if I'm going to date someone, maybe I should date someone who's Catholic, because they have, you know, good moral standing. They have a lot of, you know, good teaching. But my husband was determined not to date anybody who wasn't Catholic. Mm-hmm. So if I hadn't gone through this whole journey the year before, I never would have met him. Yeah. And he was in D.C. at that point. So I am in Emmitsburg at that point, and he's in D.C. because he had gone to Catholic University. Mm-hmm. So he was working and living there. And so we dated and got married. And then I started working at a Catholic high school. So I went full on in as soon as I became Catholic. I think like months after I became Catholic, I was like, I should do a graduate degree from Franciscan, shouldn't I? Because, you know, Franciscan University.
Yeah.
I forgot to say that Franciscan University also played a pretty big role in this, too. My dear friend went to Franciscan. And the first Triduum I ever went to was at Franciscan. Wow. So if you can imagine how awesome that is. And I was a Protestant at that point. So this was like while I was going to Asbury, she invited me. That Triduum was another kicker, like, whoa, I've got to look into this. I think 20 people became Catholic at that Triduum. And we clapped for them for 10 minutes. It was amazing. So I saw all the things that Franciscan was doing. My friend was going there. So I was like, this is amazing. My other friend was going to Catholic University, met some people who had gone to Asbury and become Catholic and had since been going to CUA, going to Catholic University. So all these like little factors of things. But so I became Catholic, and then I said, I got to get full on like hardcore here. And so I started a grad degree at Franciscan. And then I met my husband, started teaching at a Catholic high school. We just got really involved really quick. So and then we got married in 2017. So it was really kind of a quick process here.
Yeah.
All the while I'm in the parish, I'm serving. We moved sometimes as well. And I finished my graduate degree. It took me a lot longer because I ended up having two babies during that time as well. So that kind of put a pause on things. But all the while, my family is amazing. My friends, I'm like going hardcore. Now that I'm Catholic, I was like, why did I wait so long? I received my first Eucharist and I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And then I'm going to daily Mass after I received communion the first time. I was like, I got to be at Mass like every day now. Why did I not do this earlier? I'm kicking myself for spending so much time in RCIA. But got my grad degree, and then we moved to Gettysburg. So that's where we are now. And I do parish work. For the last 3 years, I've been doing parish ministry. So I really went hardcore.
Yeah,
I didn't waste any time. I went right into the church. So wonderful. I'm blessed to have a degree from Franciscan also.
Great.
The other thing I will say is that combining my Protestant past with who I am now in ministry has been a long process. Mm-hmm. So I've been Catholic now almost 10 years. So it's hard sometimes, I think, for us to reconcile that. And like the things that we grew up with and acknowledge that it was a beautiful upbringing, you know, like I learned the Bible and I'm so glad that I did. I had amazing mentors and family and community that sometimes I don't see in the parish life. Mm-hmm. Like we had one service, you know, at the Methodist church. So we all knew each other. It was like a family. Even to this day, if I was in trouble, I'd call some of those people to help me. You know, if I broke down on the side of the road and I couldn't reach my husband, I would call those people. Mm-hmm. There's just a beautiful community there. So understanding that past and understanding who I am now as a Catholic has been a long process. Yeah. And also me growing up with some sort of charismatic influence as well, and understanding how much I love the traditional liturgy So as I told you before, I call myself tradsmatic. My husband and I both do that. But yeah, it's been really helpful to find apostolates. I will say that's like one of the best things I think that's happened to us. St. Paul Street Evangelization is one of those. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I became Catholic, I was like, I got to, you know, do something about this. I just had an evangelist heart. And I was like, I got to tell people about this. That's my job in the parish right now. Also, I'm in charge of evangelization. So I wanted to do street ministry. So I got trained with them. And now I do it pretty frequently in the, you know, our area, Pennsylvania area. So that was a huge one. My husband and I have just found growth from some of like the things on Formed and Bible studies and things. I mean, the apostolates have really helped us grow. Yeah. So to combine all of those things in one and be who I am now.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, it strikes me always that that's a complex topic, because on one level, there's the question of like, what are the real connections between, you know, your Protestant background, the different denominations and beliefs, and actual Catholic stuff? You know, what are there are real similarities, there are real differences. So that's one level of it. But a whole secondary level is just the question of, what do I actually meet at the parish, whether I should or not, right? Like many people, one topic amongst there is many people are come from, again, a very close-knit Protestant background, you know, close relationships, Bible studies, a lot of that. And then they find something very different in the Catholic parish. Sure. And some of that is not a bug, but a feature, some aspects of it. But other aspects of it are just that, no, our parishes are messy places, and they could do better in that. So it's a complex topic of bridging that gap, you know.
It is. Yeah. And I think if we understand, like, when you become Catholic, it's not like, I'm going to the perfect place now, you know. Right. I've reached heaven. Yeah. I mean, really, the church is made up of human beings. So what are you going to get? And there's things that go on. You're like, what? How is this? How is this happening? This is why I became Catholic. I didn't want to do any of that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
You have to understand that it's Jesus. I mean, truly, wherever Jesus is. And so if this is the church that he founded, this was my philosophy too. I was like, I better stay here.
Yeah.
And I better be, this is why it took me, I think, so long to decide to come into the church, because I wanted to make sure this is it.
Yeah.
And because I'm not going anywhere else. I'm not doing this whole journey again. No, thank you. It was a long journey, and I'm glad to be where I am. And the journey is really what made me who I am.
Yeah.
And combining all this stuff. But you have to come to grips with, like, it's about Jesus.
Right.
And the church is his church. It's his bride. And so now in doing parish work, which is the messiest of the messy work, I have to just give it up and be like JP2 was always like, I'm going to bed. This is your church, Lord. Like, I have to sometimes say, Lord, there's just messiness, but we are family. And it's different than what I had, but I'm so glad I had that. Yeah. So I can bring a piece of that into this environment, but also not become discouraged and not just leave, you know?
Right, right.
And again, there was no option for me to do that.
Yeah.
In all the Protestant searching, I could just go to a church and I'm like, I don't really like this. And I could just leave. Mm-hmm. But I always felt like if I became Catholic, I can't do that. Like, this is a big thing. I can't just, you know, come in and take sacraments and then decide one day I'm going to leave.
Yeah.
So it had to be 100% in. But it is, I think it's hard for people trying to reconcile those things sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
We also speak a different language, I think, sometimes that Catholics don't really understand. And it's not their fault. It's just because we grew up in a different environment with a different language.
Yeah.
Even saying the phrase born again has really disturbed some of my parishioners.
Sure.
And have to be like, well, you know, Jesus said it, John 3. But we have to kind of tailor our ministering in that sense. Yeah. Now I do RCIA. So I'm right at home with my people. You know? Over the last 3 years, I think I formed 20 people.
Wow.
So it's amazing that I get to do that
after
being in RCA so long. And I have a perspective, like, take your time. Took me a long time. But I love doing it, because it's just all the things that I had questions about, they have questions about.
Yeah. So. We have about 6 minutes left. And a topic comes to mind. Again, earlier you affirmed, you know, Asbury and the people that you studied with there. You know, I always think about that there's like two axes when on the question of the journey, right? There's the what of belief, and you're working out those questions. But the whole other axis is like, what kind of heart do you have such that you can continue searching and growing? And talk a little bit about that in terms of what you experienced, because certainly there was a culture of truth seeking there.
Yeah.
And that is part of being able to be led to the church. But then even beyond that, right, to be able to continue growing, you have to cultivate that same spirit, right? Talk a little bit about that other axis of being openness to truth, being open to growth and journeying, being led by God. Yeah.
Yeah, you better have some willpower, yeah, to face in that environment people who just really don't understand the church, the Catholic Church at all.
Yeah.
I think I just feel like the people there wanted me to find the truth. Mm-hmm. And if it meant Catholicism for me, they were okay with that. Mm-hmm. That sounds very relativistic, but it's hard. I think it's hard for them to be confronted with something that's just so foreign to what they ever would think. Yeah. There were definitely Catholics who had attended Asbury. Mm-hmm. There were definitely always professors that were Catholic that were teaching art or something.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the norm.
Yeah.
But I remember when I went to the chaplain, even there, who's still the chaplain, great man. And I told him all these things. I told him some concerns I had about things, ministries that I was involved in the college. And then I told him, I was like, well, I'm also like, you know, I'm really interested in Catholicism. And he was like, really? I mean, he was very understanding, which I think I just expected it to be hard. And he was so understanding. So then when I became Catholic and like, I went back to Asbury last summer and I saw him and he was just there, you know, with arms open wide accepting me.
Yeah.
But it's definitely like you have to keep moving forward if you really want to know the truth, even if everyone is naysaying you or questioning what you're doing.
Well, and that questioning, again, is a mark of a fellow truth seeker, right? Like if someone cares about truth, if someone doesn't care about truth, then yes, you exploring Catholicism or any other, you know, next step in your journey is not going to be that big deal, right? And that's, I think we have more of that in the modern world.
Absolutely.
Where people don't care enough about truth to have arguments anymore. Whereas if you made a fellow truth seeker and you start exploring an idea that is seems to them crazy, they're going to let you know.
Yep.
Right? So there needs to be respect, but also like to care enough about truth to challenge and to, again, want to go deeper in it.
Yeah. And those conversations were the cafeteria conversations, you know, or the my Bible class asking my professor, can you explain John 6? And my friends who are there trying to be pastors, you know, and being like,
Yeah.
At least, like, even if the answer wasn't good, maybe I made them think.
Yeah.
Or maybe my journey into Catholicism made them think twice about just accepting whatever teaching they'd grown up with.
Right.
I would really pray and hope that was the case.
Yeah.
I mean, my time at Asbury, too, I was leading music. We had required chapel 3 times a week. So I was leading worship music pretty frequently. And so I had an opportunity to bring in some interesting songs into that mix.
Nice.
And I remember one time we brought in Matt Maher singing Adoration. I mean, we sang the song Adoration, which is literally Tantum Ergo in English, right? And I'm like looking at this like, we're singing Adoration in Hughes Chapel at Asbury, a Protestant place. We're singing it. And I was like, somebody needs to listen to this. You know, like I want the people to receive because the words are rich.
Yeah.
It's all about bowing down before the host, you know, like...
Yeah.
So that was miraculous to me that we were able to do kind of that stuff. I brought in some other Catholic things that were, you know, slyly liturgical or whatever.
Yeah.
No one seemed to have a problem with it. But the fact that they let me do it, again, it just gives so much credit to Asbury.
We have just a couple minutes left here. But, you know, if there's someone listening, whether someone who is not Catholic, but again, a fellow journeyer, a fellow truth seeker or a new convert, again, that openness to truth and that openness to journey continues. So give them a word of encouragement. Again, whether we're talking to journeyers or converts, a word of encouragement about the continual journey, continual conversion.
Yeah, don't stop. It's ongoing conversion.
Yeah.
For us converts, I think it can be easy to get pigeonholed in, I'm Catholic now, I don't need anything else. But understanding your background and making sure you come to terms with how you grew up, and also that you're Catholic now, I think is the best way to witness to all sides. Because they always tell us the converts are the fiery ones, you know. The Catholic Church needs you guys.
Yeah.
Well, the Protestants need us too. Like they need us to share that we were there, you know, and we appreciate the way we grew up. And it wasn't for loss or waste, okay? And then for those of those people who are like, you know, discerning coming into the church, don't wait so long. That's what I would have told myself. But really do what you need to do and get some people around you who are going to support you, no matter what, whatever the truth may be, like that they want you to find that truth. And that truth happens to be Jesus, you know, in the Catholic Church, but put those people around you too. So you're not just doing it by yourself.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Becca, for coming to share your story. And thanks for your, again, your vocation. Yeah. Now that you're married, you have children, and also for your ministry. Thank you for that. And we're praying for you.
Thank you.
As the journey continues, again, I pray that Becca's story was an inspiration to you, and always such a great reminder that we remain on a journey. The journey continues in this life. It's not just about getting the beliefs right. That's a big piece of it. What do I believe? What's true? But then also there's the me believing it. I need to be transformed in Christ, and that's a lifelong journey. You've got to be open to that journey. So let's keep praying for each other on that journey. We'll be back again next week with another conversion story. In the meantime, God bless you. See you then.